Earlier this week, What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast was joined by the marvellous Gareth Widdop. Gareth, an England international and currently applying his trade in the NRL as the St George Illawarra Dragons captain, and as of next season, will be playing in Super League for the Mighty Wire. So please excuse Sam, Dennis and myself for our antics. Here's what Gareth had to say. He turned out to be a fantastic guest as we discuss footy, lifestyle in the UK and Oz, plus, unfortunately, Dennis's tackle bags. But don't blame the music on us, that was Gareth's choice. This is Gareth Widdop on What Would Brian Bevan Say? Here on What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast, we are joined by the current St George Dragons and as of from next season, Warrington Wolves player. It's Gareth Widdop. G'day, Gareth. How you going, mate?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, not so bad. Now, straight away, I've gone for the g'day, mate. How you going? But, like, how does that sit with you? When you go back to Halifax, do you do the g'day or is it how do? What do you end up doing?
A bit of both, I think. I'm a bit confused, I reckon. Well, that's what my mates keep telling me anyway. I certainly don't say it around my grandparents because I'll get a slab. So
what is it? Is it a right? Is it how do? What do you go for?
Yeah, how you going? I think.
How you going? Yeah.
You're all right. Yeah, how you going?
I think when I first came out here, I used to say, are you all right? And everyone thought I was saying you got a problem with them. You know, yeah, they weren't quite.
That's certainly the problem. Yeah. I still, every now and then, I sort of slip up and say, you're all right. And I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. Why? What's wrong with you? I'm just acknowledging you're okay, but I'm used to it now.
Dennis? I just noticed something that your accent is quite. You kept your accent, Gareth, whereas Rob he's got little bits of intonations at the end of his words. How have you managed to keep your accent, having been down there for that long?
Have I really? Or are you taking the piss? Because my mates often tell me that, and extremely Australian now, but. Oh, I don't know. I suppose when you're around Aussies, apparently I get told I use a bit of the slang every now and then. I've been here a long time, so yeah.
Because I'm down in Somerset, and what happens in Somerset is that everybody's sort of like a southerner. So it purposely makes me keep my northern accent. So I do it on purpose and try and sort of like, you know, make sure I always like get a northern term in which they can't understand, just to, you know, keep it real.
Yeah, I have to keep it real.
Well, I tell you what, mate, you must be coming up about 50-50, aren't you, now, in terms of living in the UK and living in Australia? Like, you must be pretty much bang on that 50-50 mark, almost.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I think maybe next year, I think it'll be, 15, 16 years being here now, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time. I suppose I've lived most of my adult life. What do you got your finger up for? What have you got to say?
This is the rhythm method. Come on, Sam.
Yeah. With you being down there 50-50 in your life, does it make you feel more British? Do you deliberately go against the Aussies, or is that only in the sporting context?
No, I think I deliberately go against the Aussies. The more I'm here, the more I seem to go against them. But when you've got three young kids who are Australian and your wife's Australian, it makes it a little bit harder.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think as you get a bit older and longer you get, you sort of want to go against the Aussies. You never want them winning or doing anything better than you, do you?
No, don't think so. I'm the same. I tell you, if Australia were playing in the back garden, Gareth, I'd draw the curtains. It's the way I am, mate.
Definitely.
Fair enough. Now, you started playing your rugby in Halifax. How old were you when you started your donning the boots and getting out there on the muddy fields?
Yeah, I would have been like a lot of young kids from Halifax, I guess, at the age of 3 or 4. I suppose I come from a rugby league sort of family, and my local team was King Cross in Halifax there. And basically, yeah, from the age of 3 or 4, I think I got my first football boots, or I should say rugby boots. And
there he goes again, you see. Doesn't know if footy, rugby, don't know where he stands.
I told you, I'm confused. But yeah, from a very young age, it's sort of something that I've always sort of I've done and wanted to do, and I'm quite fortunate to be where I am.
His younger brother awaits his NRL debut on the bench, Joey. Oh, intercepts! Brilliant read from Widdop. Across comes Cullen. He's taking metres off him. the whole journey, but he won't be able to prevent the try. Winner goes 90 metres off the intercept pass thrown by DCE.
You weren't sort of tempted by Leeds United down the road. You must be pretty dab on with your feet, aren't you, mate? What about a game of football?
Look, at school I used to love playing, I'm going to call it football, not soccer. But I was always, like I said, all my friends and family were majority rugby league players, so I just sort of went down, I have to be honest.
Right. And then you watched Halifax growing up, or was it Bradford you watched?
Yeah, it was. I don't like telling too many people, but I actually followed Bradford as a kid, yeah.
So you caught them in the heyday, didn't you? It must have been around about the time when they were winning everything.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I jumped on the bandwagon. I had to. I actually had a school friend who's come from a wealthy background, and he bought me a season ticket to the Bradford Bulls and at Oddsall. So basically, that's where it sort of started. I got a free season ticket and jumped at the bit, and obviously they were winning everything back then, so I thought it was a good idea to support the Bulls.
I remember watching a game at Oddsall when I was about 15, and it was that cold that the tannoy froze and fell over onto the ground.
It wouldn't surprise me. I'd love to play there one day. Obviously, as a kid, like I said, watched it, but it's down in that big hole down there. I can imagine it gets nice and cold in winter.
Oh, mate, it would suit your game, wouldn't it? Kicking to those corners at Bradford, it'd hold up perfectly, wouldn't it, in those corners?
Yeah, it would. We know grass on the field, just mud.
Who were your heroes? Was it Paul?
Yeah, Robbie Paul was my favourite player as a kid, actually. Obviously, Henry as well. But, Robbie Paul was certainly my favourite player. Back when I was a kid, he was just always a player I sort of wanted to be and sort of replicate when I was younger.
Well, Robbie Paul has just lost to the Wire Flyer. I don't know if you've seen this, Gareth.
I've seen a little bit knocking about on social media.
Now, we had Tom Lynham on a couple of weeks ago, and he fancies his chances against the Wire Flyer. He thinks he kicks on that second 100. It's a 200. You fancy yourself over 200 or more sort of 60 metres against him?
Oh, probably 20 metres. That's about it. I have seen him knocking about a little bit on social media, so and have to chase him up and try to find out who he is, I think.
Yeah, well, we're trying to get a bit of a petition going at the moment to get Steve Price against him by the end of the year. We don't fancy his chances, to be honest, because he's living north of Warrington now, and he's coming past KFC all the way down on the way down to Halliwell Jones.
He's looking a little bit large, isn't he?
He is a bit. So, mate, Australia, like, what? When you're sort of 5 or 6, 7 or 8, there was no sort of signs of you coming to us, no?
No, not really. I guess I come from a family. We did a bit of travelling and didn't have a huge family, and got to a point, I think, we were in high school, and we actually came out to Australia, I think, when I was about 12, I think, maybe 12 or 13, and sort of had some friends over here, sort of seeing the lifestyle, and basically that was it. I got a younger sister who's a couple of years younger than me, and parents decided it'd be a better lifestyle and basically packed up and moved to the other side of the world and left everyone behind. And
off you went.
To be fair, it's worked well.
Yeah, certainly say that, mate. Now, when I got here, and I work in sort of the relocation industry, Australia has the highest failure rate of expats in the world. About 50% of expats go back within 4 years. They all come out thinking they're going to be surfing, you know, down at Bondi Beach at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And of course, there's traffic and everything else, just like there is in Britain. Was there any homesickness, mate, when you first got here? You know, there was no WhatsApp, there was no FaceTime. How did you sort of fit in?
Yeah, it was certainly difficult. I remember that, especially being at that age when I was, you know, 16, turning 17, started getting on the booze a little bit back home with all my mates after school.
So come on, which club were you sneaking into? You must have been clubbing it at 16 in Halifax.
Edison's or the Acca. I think you can get in the Acca when you're 12. So it was quite difficult me first, especially the first year. I remember I think I'd been here about maybe 8 or 9 months, and I was like, I just wanted to get back home for a couple of weeks.
And did that help or did that make it worse? I mean, you get back.
Well, I only went back for 2 weeks and ended up staying for a month. So, but in saying that, I sort of got back, and at the time, the under-20s competition in Melbourne was starting. So,
yeah,
sort of give me an avenue to get into something. But if it wasn't for that to sort of probably start, then there's a fair chance I reckon I would have moved back, because I was struggling a little bit. I just started my apprenticeship in carpentry as well. But yeah, it was quite difficult at fair, to be honest.
Is that something that you're going to go back into, Gareth, at the end of your career? Being that Chris Hill announced this week that he's opening a plumbing business, are you going to join forces?
I might have to, yeah. I need something to get into after rugby, otherwise I'm stuffed.
Have you got any ideas?
No, look, I think probably the coaching, down the coaching line, somewhere along that line. I guess since a kid, that is all I've ever known. Like I said, I did start my apprenticeship in carpentry building, which was always something that interested me, but you know, I've been doing this for, 10, 12 years now, so I don't want to be shifting bricks and lifting tools when I finish football. So, yeah.
But if you ever need a cashing hand job, I've got some shelves need putting up.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Rob went down the trade route, but he was absolutely shit, so he moved into something else.
Yeah, there was a day when I left the chuck key in the lathe, and it went flying across the room and nearly took out Mr. Brooks, God love him. Would have gone straight through him, wouldn't it? I don't know. Happy days. So you're out here, you're playing in that under-20s, mate. I remember watching you in the final of that under-20s. I think you scored the winning try that day. I'm at a barbecue with a whole group of Aussies, you know, knocking the English game. And I'm going, he's English, that lad. He's from Yorkshire. None of them were having it. At that point, was there any sort of sniffs from Super League to say, this lad's English, we could get him on our books? Did you get any sort of opportunities to come over early on?
Yes, like I sort of mentioned before, like I was struggling in the early days, but then at the same time, I was quite fortunate to meet my now wife Carly as well, which certainly made the decision to stay in Oz a lot easier. But I remember the first couple of years of 20s, obviously I was playing fullback at the time, or in the halves. You had Cooper Cronk, Billy Slater, two of the obviously greatest players to play.
Who?
But anyway, I knew it was going to be quite difficult, obviously, to get into first grade. So, I think there was a few opportunities to maybe come back. But, you know, I just sort of started to settle into life in Australia and, you know, to get to play in the NRL as, I suppose, a boy from Halifax. I sort of bided my time and sort of got told that there'd be a position there at Melbourne in the next coming years, in the halves. And basically just knuckled down, worked hard, and you know, luckily enough, I got that number 6 jersey and sort of never looked back from there, really.
So when you got that 6 jersey, were you ringing home to your granddad and saying, I'm going to play standoff? Or were you like confusing him with saying, I'm going to be 5'8"?
Yeah, probably at the time I would have probably said standoff because it was still fresh. But to this day, he calls it 5'8". Now even my grandma calls it
5'8". Does he? God love him.
Strange. So I didn't want to confuse him too much back then, but it's now 5'8", not standoff.
Gone that way. Well, that Melbourne team was just a superb team. Steve Price talks a lot about resilience. You know, he's keen to get the resilience in the team. I've got a very resilient netball team. Never, you know, they never give up. But that Melbourne team, mate, surely it was just pure class, wasn't it? All over the park. It was more than resilience.
I suppose you look at them today with the amount of turnover they have throughout the years. They're always, you know, in the top four, they're always super consistent, and the culture they've got there from the very beginning. Obviously, it starts with Craig Bellamy, who say one of the greatest coaches to coach the game, and it all starts with him. And he just demands the best. And if you're not giving your best, and you're not, like you said, being resilient, you're not working for your teammates. It's about putting your team first before yourself. You'll find you won't be at the club for very long. So it's pretty ruthless down there. And, you know, sometimes you've got to get a bit of a kick up the ass from certain coaches and people, but it turns you into a better person and human being. And
does that go into the training as well? Every time you're at the club, the standard has to be high, because by doing high standards day in, day out, it transfers to the pitch.
Yeah, certainly. And that's in general life as well. He tries and installs that into you. But certainly when you're at training, we have a standard to set. And you drop below that standard too much, well, you probably won't find yourself at the club for much longer. So, and to be unfair, that's why they've had so much success, because they just don't accept anything. But the standards they set. And I've certainly learned a hell of a lot from my time down in Melbourne. And, like I said, played with some of the greatest players, probably going to be immortals of the game, and Craig is one of the best coaches of the game. So it's certainly, I'm very thankful that I got that opportunity as a kid to come through probably the greatest system in rugby league.
Having sort of coming up watching rugby league, Gareth, I mean, I always thought that, and I shouldn't really say this because he's a Wiganer, but I thought Ellery Hanley was just in a class of his own coming through those sort of matches in the 80s. Was there a one standout player that, you know, in your career that you've thought he's just better than all the rest?
I've been quite fortunate to obviously play a lot against, so I've got a player against a lot of good players and play with a lot of great players. Like I said, I'm probably lucky enough to say I play with three immortals, and obviously Cooper, Cameron, and Billy.
Yeah.
And,
I'll put you on the spot, mate. Right, your fantasy team. Sam does a fantasy team every week. Right, you got your first pick. Current NRL player, who are you picking on your fantasy team?
Cameron Smith. There you go.
Okay. All right. And Super League, would you go for Gary Wheeler? Possibly Kevin Brown?
Or Josh Charlie.
You go just, would you? Josh Charlie. Good on you. He's coming on a pod in a few weeks, so we'll mention that to him. All right. Now, do you follow Super League closely? I mean, it's at first it was a bit hard to get the sort of signal for Super League, but this day and age, you can pretty much watch every match. Are you watching it?
Yeah, look, to be honest, there's enough rugby league, as you know, over here in Australia. Every single day, there's a league channel on. So to be fair, I try stay away from watching too much of it, to be honest, because it's just, as like I said before, it's quite full on over here. But yeah, the games are on TV every now and then on Foxtel, so I do try, you know, watch and catch up on scores from the weekend's games. Obviously, heading back there now, probably keep a bit more of a closer eye on it. But I did see that Halifax are in the Challenge Cup semi-final, so I'll be cheering them on.
Oh, yes.
On that bit with the media and things like that, I mean, obviously we're leading the way with the podcasting, because that's something that, you know, yes, not a lot of clubs are
good
doing.
Good point, Dennis.
I'm just thinking, with the media over there, how do you find that difficult? Do you do a lot of, like, you know, PR work when you're over there?
Yeah, considering from when I first came into the game, probably 10 years ago, to where we are now, the game has just grown incredibly, and it's almost getting like your Premier League footballers in the UK. It's just every day, every channel is just rugby league. So, as young kids coming through, we do have media managers, and we do have people at the club to, you know, help with media, because it's today's day and age, it's everywhere and anywhere. So you need to be able to handle yourself in different situations. And, I've been around long enough now to, you know, think that I can handle it, you know, well enough at times. So, looking forward to sort of getting away from it, to be honest.
Yeah, the Warrington Wolves, I mean, they're really trying to push the social media aspect of it now. So, you know, you get everything from, you know, player interviews, behind the scenes, Wolfie getting tackled by the coach and all this lot. So, you know, I think, although you'd be stepping out of it there, I think that Warrington are looking to obviously, you know, exploit, you know, from a PR point of view with the players and things. So, but it'd be a lot nicer over this side, Gareth, rather than, you know, being very critical as the Aussie press are. I think our press are a bit lighter. So you're looking forward to that, you know, coming over here. Is that one of the things that you'd be looking forward to when you arrive?
Yeah, definitely, to, you know, hopefully try and grow the game in the UK. Obviously, it's hard to compete with the Premier League and the Rugby Union. So, it's certainly something that, you know, hopefully can come back. And if I can play a small part in, you know, promoting, obviously, Warrington, but just rugby league in general in the UK, you know, doing everything possible.
Are you going to station yourself in Warrington, or are you going to be getting on that bus with all the other lads that come over from Yorkshire every day?
No, I'm not too sure at the moment, to be honest. I'm going to have to figure that out somewhere in between Warrington and Halifax. I think we'll find somewhere.
Get a feel of it. We've got a lad who obviously plays Warrington by the name of Ben Curry. A few questions now from the podcasters. Curry or Chinese, what do you go for?
Oh, it'd have to be a curry. I just had a curry about half an hour ago, actually.
I tell you what, mate, it won't be as good as the curry you get in Bradford. Oh,
no, it's certainly not.
Well, I've got one for you to acclimatise. There's a Chinese restaurant in Grapnel called the Choi Hing. It's been there how long, Sam? About 40 years, has it been there?
At least, yeah. 40 years, yeah.
I've got four starters. To get you sort of integrated into the system and working on the British pound again, Gareth, I've got four starters here. I want you to put them in order of what's the most expensive to what's the cheapest. All right? So I'll give you the four. Going for prawn toast, spring rolls, aromatic crispy duck, bearing in mind it's only quarter of a duck,
yeah,
and hot and sour soup. What do you think's the most expensive out of those four?
It'd have to be the duck, wouldn't it?
He's on the mark. He's on the mark straight away.
I think the duck's off the ship, Canal. I don't think it is.
All right, you got an aromatic crispy duck. Hot sour soup or spring rolls or prawn toast is the cheapest?
It's the cheapest. Oh, geez. Toast, wouldn't it?
Oh, you've missed it by 50p. It's the hot and sour soup, mate. £4. So you can't beat that.
Also from the ship canal.
Last one, just before we leave the restaurant behind. Duck in orange sauce or duck in plum sauce? Which is the most expensive?
Both the same, I reckon.
Tell you what, it was a trick question, and Gareth Widdop has hit the nail on the head. There's no trick in this, lad.
Nah, halfback, mate. I have to be switched on. You know what it's like.
It's a cumin lounge in Leeds, anyway. That's what Tom Lynham said. That's the best place for a curry. So.
Yeah, he was into that.
Sagres in Halifax. There you go.
Oh. We'll look that
we
one
only
up.
Do this for sponsors. Yeah, I'm going up north next week.
All right, here's one for you. Okay, Harry Sunderland Trophy. Okay, it's the trophy that's handed out in the Super League Grand Final. Would you go for the Harry Sunderland Trophy or a lifetime reusable 2-for-1 voucher for any main meal in Pizza Express Monday to Thursday? Bearing in mind it's for life, Gareth. You've got, you know, the family to look after. It's only a medal on a shelf.
It'd have to be the medal, wouldn't it?
I'm going pizza. You going pizza, Sam?
Career man there.
That's it.
Last night, Warrington beat Catalans. There was a young fullback, 17 years of age, Josh Fell. How am I saying it?
Fulis.
He sent me a Twitter message this morning to say he's going to listen into this, and he'd like a bit of advice. So, for a 17-year-old kid just starting out on his career, he's flash hot. What advice would you give him, mate?
Oh, I guess as a young kid coming through, no shortcuts, doing all the 1%ers. Behind the closed doors that people don't see, and everything you do needs to be team first action. Put the team before yourself, and is there any young kid coming through, I think they're the main sort of things that you can hopefully build your career on.
Do you hear that, Dennis? The 1%ers, you're always cutting corners in the factory. Aren't
you? No. I always say psychology. That's the thing. You know, there was no tactics or anything in that. It's just psychology, innit? I will come on to this because I've got quite a few suggestions about improving.
We should probably do this now. Every week on the podcast, and I don't know how, but it's become the most popular part of the podcast. We do a bit called Dennis's Tackle Bags, where he comes at the sport from left field, and he comes up. Yeah, he comes up with these ideas, and then all these people write in or email or whatever they do, send him smoke signals. Come on, Dennis, give some to Gareth.
Tackle bags.
I'll start off with breakfast. I've come up with an invention for Weetabix and invented something called the Weetabrick, which is effectively a house brick-sized Weetabix. And what we're trying to think of is that when, you know, with like players and modern day sort of, you know, what do they call them? People who advise about food and
nutritions.
Things.
Nutritionists, Dennis. Yeah, those people.
I thought, well, you know, wouldn't it be a good idea then that we should really sort of like supersize a breakfast and things like that? So other things that I moved on to, I'm just going to go a bit left field, but leotards. I thought that, you know, when you watch 100 metres runners and things like that, that, you know, they wear leotards, obviously thinking about speed. But I'm thinking,
Are you going to put your Weetabix down the front?
No. that could be. It'd get all crushed. Wouldn't be comfortable. But, I mean, you know, what about wearing leotards as a rugby player? Because, you know, nobody could grab your shorts and things like that. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, where are you going with this? Is this a little bit of a... bit of research on my gymnastic background, is it?
That's right, Gareth. Yes, I'm just coming from left field. I'm surprised the other podcasters now. So, just tell us a bit about your gym exploits.
You know nothing about his gymnastics.
I actually did. Yeah, I was a gymnast growing up. It was either being a gymnast or rugby league at about the age of 14. It was actually wearing leotards and getting around and flipping around. And that was actually me mum used to do gym, so it was something I sort of took quite serious and I think really helped me in my rugby league career. But got to the age of 13, I think, 13, 14, and decided rugby league was the path. So there you go.
What were you good at, mate? On the horse, the rings? What was the one you best?
The vault.
The vault.
Yeah. So it could have been you and Max Whitlock on the at the Olympic Games, could it?
Could have been.
Would you not consider doing an after try scoring celebration by doing one of these flips or anything then, Gareth?
Oh no, because if I didn't pull it off, it'd look like a right. Actually, Blake Ferguson, if you know him, who plays for Parramatta, he's introduced the flip and he does it quite impressively, actually. So I think we'll just leave it to him, I reckon.
I went to watch Warrington play Salford when I went back a few years ago, Gareth, and this lot all want to get into Manchester Town Centre for a beer quickly. And Manchester City Council had put up this little barrier and I went to jump it and caught it in my back leg, didn't it, Dennis? Had to go around Manchester all night covered in shit. It was horrible.
Nothing to do with the 4 pints that got you pissed, though, was it?
No, it wasn't to do with that. Come on, Dennis, give him some more.
Right, okay. Well, what about... this one's a good one for Gareth, because he's a kicker. In-goal area bonus point system. So imagine the in-goal. We segregate it out into sort of four at the ends, at the side. And then it goes 4-3-2-1. So if you kick and you get a try scored off your kick and it's scored in the corner, you get an extra bonus 4 points.
It's a knockout, isn't it?
A lot of these things are just like trying to sort of introduce new things. You can imagine where we've been 20 years with rugby league. How are we going to, focus on something in other areas?
We have to put up with this every week.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Every week.
Next question.
Come on, how about your electric ball? That's a good one.
Well, the electric ball, what I was suggesting there is that the technology nowadays is that you can actually, inside a rugby ball, put a sensor in it. And at the same time, you can actually track that ball as it goes across the field. So when it's actually touched down in the in goal, you could actually verify it scientifically with imagine a conducting circuit. That's what I have to explain it like. So you can guarantee that rather than going to the video ref, it automatically flashes up try. It's only a tiny, tiny little sensor in it. So, the other thing I thought about as well is that could be used to rule out forward passes because you can use 3D radar on the pitch.
Hey, that's a good point, Dennis.
I've not brought that out.
It's better than the grids and all that crap you come up with before. So,
Dennis, write to the RL. Write to the RL and get Gareth to sign it. And I think that one's a winner. I think that one's in.
If I actually told you about some of the comments that I do get on that, Gav, then they probably agree with you.
It's nearly as good as your shirt and hat.
I only did this for you. Don't start calling it. I'll have to go take it. It's bloody boiling.
Now, I've always thought, going to watch Manly, mate, I went to watch my first Manly game when they played Norths and Matthew Ridge was playing fullback and I could hear him talking through the entire game. I couldn't believe it. One of the lads I was with, he watched Morecambe football team, and he said there was more atmosphere at Morecambe than there was at Manly. And this was supposed to be the big derby. I always think when I watch NRL, I don't know if it's the players, but when they break through, they always seem quite composed. And I've always thought sometimes in England, that composure disappears just because of the roar of the crowd. It's almost as if I've gone through a gap. Do you find that at all? Do you find louder crowds make it harder for you?
Oh, yeah, you certainly probably notice a lot more. I think, obviously, I've only played in England, obviously for England, so you certainly know what the crowds are like. But, the atmosphere certainly plays a part on the game, especially if you're kicking goals for argument's sake. In terms of Australia over here in the NRL compared to being back in England, the crowds are, a lot different. Probably get bigger crowds over here in Oz, but the atmosphere is certainly probably not as loud and a bit more timid, a bit more tame, I guess.
Do you find you can feed off energy from the crowd, or once you become an experienced player like yourself, you block it out? Which way round does that tend to go?
I think a bit of both. I think you can certainly feed from the crowd, and I've played in some pretty big games, and the crowd's made a big difference. You can just feel the energy, packed out stadium with people screaming, singing songs. You can certainly lift from that, but at the same time, when they're on the flip side, when they're on your back, you sort of learn to sort of block it out, I guess. So I suppose as a young kid, it can be quite nerve-wracking coming up against some big crowds and vocal crowds, but as you get a little bit older, you sort of deal with it and you use it to your advantage, and you just sort of forget about it when things are not going too well.
Mm.
So before you came to Melbourne, what was the biggest crowd you played in front of? Did you know everyone's name?
Yeah, would have been. Playing at King Cross, I think.
A couple of dogs. Oh, dear. We're all allowed to pass out on the show in terms of, obviously Sam's married, Dennis and myself have got beautiful partners, but we've all been given a pass out. My pass out is Claudia Winkleman. Don't know if you've seen her. She's off Strictly. She's the thinking man's crumpet, Gareth. Sam's gone for Fiona Bruce, who presents the Antique Roadshow. I mean, I don't know why, but he has. And Dennis quite likes Dick Emery, dressed up as a woman, when he says, "Ooh, you are awful," from the 1970s sitcom. Do you have a pass out at all, mate?
It'd have to be Pat from EastEnders, isn't it? Is it Pat from EastEnders?
Oh, dear. I think he's avoiding that question, Rob.
Well, when you did come out, one thing I did miss was the TV. Did you struggle with that when you arrived here? Was there anything you sort of left behind and you thought, gee, I'm missing Football Focus, or there must have been something off the box you missed?
Yeah, okay, to be fair, I couldn't answer that question. I, like I said, I was 16 at the time, so all I wanted to do was probably go out and have a drink and
go to that nightclub when you were 14. Yeah,
that's right. So,
never do a DNA test, Gareth. Never do a DNA test. That's all I can say. I was also going to ask you another one about what you're going to miss about Australia. I think the thing that I would miss most of all, apart from the sunshine and the people and family here, would be the coffee. Are you into the coffee
tell
here?
Me about it. Yeah, tell me about it.
What are you going to do, Gareth, when you get over there?
Well, I've already done my research. I'm going to get a Breville coffee machine. I'm going to get the beans from my local coffee shop and get them shipped over. So, because that's one thing it will drive me insane, not being able to get a good coffee. And I can't be having Costa or Cafe Nero or Starbucks.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but I also went down the same path. My brother did this for me, and he got the coffee machine and we got the granules from my local coffee shop just down in Manly. We thought it was all set up, mate. It tastes like dishwater. And then the barista came over. He came over, he had a go at it, Adam, and he said that it's the water.
Oh,
really?
He seems to think that's the water more than anything else. Now, I'm not sure if it's going around the tap in Sydney four times or it's, it's that soft Yorkshire water, but something's not quite right.
I don't know, but yeah, that's one thing that will absolutely drive me insane, I reckon. So I'm going to have to either find a good coffee shop somewhere or I'm going to have to do a barista course and get a big coffee machine, I think.
Sam does quite a good coffee, mate, don't you? You did a good coffee for me last year.
I've got a decent coffee machine, a decent quality coffee. So, yeah.
Well, mate, I've been going back to Warrington for 20 years after drinking Australian coffee. And surprisingly, the best coffee I've found in England is at McDonald's on Bridgefoot. So,
crumbs.
Worst case,
mate. I'm not kidding, mate. Just give it a go. Give it a go. What are you looking forward to about England? I mean, you've got your grandma and granddad over here. You must be absolutely delighted. The young family coming over and spending more time with them. They must be over the moon, aren't they?
Yeah, look, I suppose just the opportunity to, like I said before, I moved and sort of missed out on my adulthood, growing up in the UK. I obviously grew up as a teenager, a young boy. So, just being able to experience and do a little bit of travelling around England, really, as an adult with the family, and also being a bit close to my grandparents and my friends, a couple of friends I went to school with, and just having.
Way as I did pointing out the cracks in the pavement and tutting my heel and strutting my feet. Is there anything I can do for you, dear? Is there anyone I could call? No one, thank you, please, madame. I ain't lost, just wondering. Round my hometown, making memories afraid.
Good on you, mate. Be good to do. And your granddad's going to get over to the games? He's a big rugby league fan?
Yeah. To be fair, I think when he was sort of growing up, he was more into his cricket and football, to be honest.
Right. Yep.
Well, he sort of, since my uncle, he played just local soccer as well. So I think it's always since I started playing, he sort of followed it. But yeah, they do. My grandma's the one who... She's up every... I don't think she's missed a game since I've been playing at the Dragon. She's up no matter what time it is. She's got a little, like a little red dragon, apparently. She strokes.
You've got time. One of those, haven't you, Dennis?
Yeah, it's not a red dragon, though.
So, yeah, they do. Yeah, like I said, my grandparents fought a little bit. Oh, they'll probably get to a couple of games, but, you know, they're getting a bit old now. It's a bit far and a bit cold to travel, so they'll probably just sit on the lounge, have his pint of Tetleys and watch it, I think.
Oh, Sam will pick him up. He'll bop over. It's everyone's warm and lovely in the north of England, mate.
Yeah. We're all
no
friendly.
No problem at all. No problem at all. Halfway, McInnes, pick up and go. Trying to do a cook and doing magnificently well. Now to Bellum. Dufty kicks. Whittip is there for the Dragons. What a bounce. What a try to the Red V. Started by Cam McInnes, continued by Matt Dufty, and finished by Gareth Widdop. There's all the things we've been seeing all year from the track. So you've got onto the fizzy Aussie beer. I mean, you might have had that flat beer, wouldn't you, growing up in Yorkshire? We are actually sponsored by Timothy Taylor, which
Timothy
is a brewery
Taylor's.
In Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Sorry, Timothy Taylor. Taylor's. Well, I have to say, Dennis, it's more like Taylor these days because we haven't seen that much beer from them in the last few months.
No, I've entered a competition for a lookalike on one of their beers. I'm hoping for 16 bottles in the next few weeks.
Good luck with that.
I know.
Will you be back on the real bitter, or will you be staying on the lager, mate, when you're back over there?
Yeah, like I said, I sort of got on the lagers. The Fosters, actually, Fosters or Carlin, I think it was, just before I moved, and then got to Oz and then no one drunk Fosters. So
yeah.
Then I didn't really get into the beer. Everyone sort of gets on the vodka and lime and sodas and JD and Coke over here.
Yeah.
Wasn't so much beer drinking done, to be honest, but probably get on the bitter, I reckon. I'm getting a little bit older now, so.
Worth pointing out, Tom Lynham liked his beers, and he was quite specific on saying he liked strong beers. Special brew. Which is like really strong. But he did point out that he actually lowered the alcoholic percentage in that for a few years ago as well. So he knows his strong beers.
Well, I know I like my red wine. I'll bottle of that after every game and have a nice relax and a bit of downtime. So.
Oh, there you go. I've got plenty of coffee and plenty of red wine. No problem.
I'll drop you a case off for your first week. Now, Tom Lynham the other week said he was going to shave all his hair off for his return, and he did. We also asked him about Ben Murdoch Masilla's hair, and he says it's lovely when it's down. It's really, really nicely conditioned. You've had a very stunning fringe for a long time, Gareth. It's almost that sort of Dunkirk look. It's a sort of chiseled... Second World War look, I'd call it. My partner thinks you're very handsome with it. It's pretty good. Well, I was going to ask you, will you be going down the Asda for conditioner, or will you be sort of heading into Marks and Spencer's?
No, to Asda. I only wash it once every 6 weeks. That's why I just sit
This is what you'll look like in about another 20 years. You start receding around
30,
here as well.
30. 30
years. Not too bad. God, is it? No, it's not 30.
And what's your partner looking forward to, Gareth? You're going to get into Trafford Centre and all those nice clothes and you know, see a bit of the country?
Yeah, well, she's never really been overseas. She's not well-travelled, so she's certainly going to have to buy some winter clothes. I know that. But, yeah, look, it's... Yeah, for my wife, to be fair, it's made a big move. I think she's left Australia once in 32 years, so
wow.
She's not travelled. So it's going to be an eye opener. But you know, being close to Europe and all the rest of it, hopefully when the time feels right, when she feels comfortable, we'll be able. You know, she's got grandparents who are from Malta. So hopefully, if she feels a bit more comfortable when we sort of get over, we'll be able to travel around Europe a little bit.
Yeah, it'd be good. And you've got a young lad, young boy's going with you as well, obviously. How old is he now?
Oh, I've got three kids. Yeah.
Oh, you've got three?
Yeah, I've got a boy who's eight.
Gee, you're looking good for three, mate. I tell you what, you're not that tired. Are you helping out at all?
I always help out. Yeah, my daughter's six and my other daughter's two, so now I'm looking forward to, none of them have ever seen snow, so I'm looking forward to being there. Hopefully have a snowy Christmas, white Christmas.
I think the kids settle in very quickly, mate. I think sometimes it takes a little bit longer for the parents to settle in, but they just hit the ground running. Are they into sport? What sort of their hobbies have they got?
Yeah, my son obviously just plays rugby league. He likes his soccer as well, but yeah, he plays just for the local team. And my daughters are into horse riding. So
right,
yeah, you have to move somewhere. Horses and football teams.
You come out on that. Well, Sam will tell you this: if you come out on the sort of south side of Warrington, just through Stockton Heath, and then a little bit further up, there's a lot of nice horse riding areas there. My daughter's been to a few while she's been over. It was a fantastic time.
Yeah, that's all you need to know is south Warrington, of the river.
There's a
north
split.
Of the river, people I've like Dennis warned. Live.
Yeah.
Show me your Asbo, Dennis. Lift your leg up.
I don't live down there now. I live near Glastonbury. It's very sedate. I'm the odd man out down here. Certainly.
No, we won't ask you too much about Warrington because I know you absolutely, when we spoke on the phone the other week, Gareth, you said you clearly are a St. George player and it's, you know, that is where your interests lie at the moment. We really want to see you in that grand final this year, mate, which would be fantastic for you to finish off your career here. And then it's Warrington next year, of course. So is it hard to sort of, you know, stay focused, but the professional you are, have you just sort of put Warrington to the back of your mind at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose it's quite a unique situation. It's probably made it a little bit more difficult, the fact of being out injured, a long-term injury. Well, not like a short-term injury. So it has been quite difficult because obviously you have a lot more time off. You're not playing each and every week. So, to be fair, it has been quite difficult. But yeah, look, sort of always can't look at too much at the future. Next year is next year. Look, I'm certainly excited for getting over there. But at the same time, I've still got things I want to achieve here. And obviously being the captain of a big club and the position we're in, it's my main focus to try to get back and play some good football for the Dragons, and who knows what can happen from there. And obviously the Great Britain Tour at the end of the year as well, it could be an opportunity to get on that as well. So Warrington next year, but my main focus is, you know, obviously this year at the Dragons.
How is your recovery going?
Yeah, no, it's going good. It's obviously, like I said, a long-term injury, so it does get quite frustrating not being able to get out there, but hopefully it shouldn't be too much longer. I'm back out running around. Hopefully can start doing skills in the next couple of weeks and sort of go from there. So it's hard to put a return date, I'm hopeful to get back before the season's out.
Yeah. And did you see that James Graham was just playing on it the other week, trying to get some attention, was he?
Yeah, he's always wanting attention. he's very needy, James. Yeah, look, we've had a bit of a tough one at the moment, but he's a tough bugger and I'm sure he'll be doing everything possible to get back.
I think that was the thing that impressed me most about you, Gareth, when we spoke on the phone, was just how focused you were on the Dragons. And I thought that came across really clearly and also was a great asset for Warrington as well to know that when we do get you, you're going to be focused on us. And I think that's a superb sign of a terrific player that you are. Another question I need to ask you, of course, is about all the English lads that are over here playing in the NRL, which one's the try-hard Aussie? Which one just tries too hard? There must be one of them, isn't there, that just thinks, mate, give it a rest. You're from the north of England.
Probably Tom Burgess.
Yeah.
When we'd go to, like, South Africa a couple of years back and he'd go up to a coffee shop, mind you, they don't do good coffee, and he's like, oh, can I have a three-quarter latte, please? He's just going, come on. You're from the north of England.
Well, I'm not going to tell him, mate, because he's a big unit. But who's the biggest lad you've played with? You didn't. I mean, the biggest lad you've probably seen play would be what, Paul Anderson at Bradford?
Yeah, probably Sonny Bill Williams, I reckon.
Biggest, is he?
Yeah, he's trying to think of who else. Oh, maybe George Rose.
Yeah, he's a big lad.
He's a big, big.
There was a lad that played for Warrington in the late 80s called Pat Pawaza, who used to come on off the bench. Oh, he was a Samoan. Podcasts will know who he was. He was an absolute monster. He made Paul Anderson look like Alfie Langer. He was that big. Yeah, he was like the refrigerator.
A couple of big lads coming through at the moment.
Yeah. Do you find, I mean, I was looking at your stats, mate. You're about 6'1", about just over 14 stone, something like that. You're pretty much absolutely spot on to my physique.
Don't say that. Got a long way back if that's the case.
I have got a dog's body.
Are they getting bigger? Are the lads getting bigger out there in comparison to when you started playing?
No, it feels like that. It feels like they're getting bigger and stronger and quicker. I suppose that's just what happens when you get a bit older, I guess. But there's plenty of talent out here in Australia. Like I said, it's the number one sport. There's just floods and floods of it coming through. So it certainly does feel like that at times, yeah.
Yeah, it's just non-stop, isn't it, over here? Do you think that sort of there are a few players that are probably lost to football over in England? I mean, my dad's always been of the sort of suggestion that the best scrum half in England was probably Wayne Rooney. You know, if you've been given a ball and played, you know, you've got that sort of, you just don't get that distraction here in Sydney. You know, you play rugby league or, and I know sort of out west they're playing soccer now, but it is the main sport, isn't it? That's the big difference here.
Yeah, it is. That's the basic. Basically, yeah, we, you know, you've got the AFL out here, which is obviously quite big, and the cricket's taken off. But yeah, the rugby league and the game over here, as you know, is just it's growing and growing and growing, and now which is great. You know, but at the same time, and sometimes it can be quite full on at times.
Did you have a go at AFL when you were down in Melbourne when you first arrived? Did you ever?
Oh, I had a few mates just knock about with. Playing. We actually used to, where we used to train at Melbourne, we used to, the Melbourne, actually the first one, the first move there, the Carlton, and then the Melbourne Demons. So we'd done a few sessions with them. We certainly did a lot of kick catch with the AFL players.
Yeah.
Which was great. And I think that's where it sort of started a little bit, you know, especially the Melbourne players, you know, with their kicking and catching skills. And I think everyone sort of from there sort of, you know, got on board and started getting kicking coaches in, etc. So, I did a little bit just for a bit of fun, I guess.
Yeah. I've just had a thought. I was driving in the car the other day and we was talking about someone was miserable. And I said, oh, do you not play any music to sort of like, you know, get you going again? Because like, well, I work in management anyway, but as a motivational tool, what would be your sort of try scoring music that would sort of follow a good try? To play at the stadium. What sort of music do you listen to in general then?
I listen to all sorts. It depends what mood I'm in. Before a game, I like to listen to a bit more sort of chilled out sort of music. But a bit of Ed Sheeran, something like that. A bit of Adele. Don't like to get too sort of hyped up before a game.
Yeah.
But then I can listen to techno. I'll listen to whatever, to be honest. R&B. Yeah.
Have you got a song, you know, the pair of you? Have you got the romantic song? Is the one that comes on and it's actually your song? Ours is Ritmo della Noche. It's a 1980s dance one from Ibiza.
Better than mine. Mine's Rollins Band. Wait.
She's the one.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very
good
slick.
That's a good one. One, 6 and 7, mate. That's sort of where you've played your career. I know you played in the centre as well a bit, I think, didn't you, at Melbourne when you started off? Do you find there's much difference between 1, 6, and 7 now? You know, is it all interchangeable?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, they're similar in certain aspects. It just sort of depends what sort of team you're in, I guess, and sort of structure you sort of play these days. I suppose now, traditionally at the moment, the fullbacks are certainly very quick, you know, and generally just sort of follow the big boys around, but have also got that ability to obviously ball play as well.
Yeah.
And then you're 6 and 7, I think. Yeah, like I said, it all depends on the way you play. You look at, say, someone like the Newcastle Knights, well, they've just got a dominant 7 in Mitchell Pearce, and he basically is just the conductor for everything.
Yeah.
Whereas someone like the Dragons, like, when I'm playing 6, and obviously got Ben Hunt there, we sort of share the load a little bit, and then I sort of float around. But generally, your halfback is 7. He's the one who takes over, and he's generally the one to, yes, you know, steer the team around. And then, yeah, like I said, I played a little bit of when I was younger. I played a fair bit of fullback.
Yeah,
I played a little bit of fullback for England, and then obviously a little bit to start this year. But yeah, 6 is my preferred position, and
yeah,
I feel most comfortable with.
Talking about England, that World Cup final, you were so close to winning that. It's, in retrospect, yeah, looking back at that, is there a moment in that game where you thought, that's where it got away from us? Was there something you'd do differently in that game now?
Oh, if Cam Watkins doesn't get ankle tapped, I reckon we can go on and win the game. Yeah. You score under the sticks. And
do you think he was away? If he'd not had that ankle tapped, he was in?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, if I remember rightly, I think it was a 2-on-1. I think he had Elliot White.
It was. McGilvery, I think it was, wasn't it?
One of them, yeah. I just felt the last 20 minutes we were just coming home strong. And yeah, sort of the ankle tap, and to be fair, I can't remember too many different moments. I think that's certainly one game, you know, for the rest of my life that you don't really want to live with regrets or anything, but that's one that'll always hurt.
Yeah.
Because we were so, so close, and one or two little things could have gone our way, and who knows.
Yeah, correct decision. Curry throws it in now. It's with Gale and Widdop. The countdown is on. The next time it goes out of play, it's all over. Watkins makes the break. Inside for McGilvray. McGilvray with a kick. Morgan has it covered. There were England players on the inside. But those England players sink to their knees in utter desperation. It's relief as much as celebration for Australia, because they have been pushed to the absolute limits by that England side tonight.
Yeah. How about then next time we play them over here? Over in the UK. You think it's going to be our chance? I mean, it's been a long, long time since we won a Test series. You think we can do it in the World Cup?
Yeah, there's no reason why not. You know, hopefully we can, you know, keep a similar team the next couple of years like we did for the World Cup. And we should have still a fair few experienced boys playing in the NRL. You know, experienced boys playing in the Super League as well, and some good young talent coming through. So there's no reason why not. And obviously the Australians have had a big change in, you know, a lot of their older experienced guys have sort of moved on as well. And the New Zealand team, obviously, are always strong, but they've got changing players. So there's no reason why we can't.
Yeah, it'll get very close.
Can I? Do you get bored of interview questions, Gareth, and you like Rob's going down the line of now?
Oh, thank you very much, Dennis. Thank you very much.
I mean, what sort of things do like rugby players in this situation? Because we talked about it at the beginning about, you know, being sort of taught how to actually, you know, deal with the press and everything. But what is it that players really, like yourself, want to talk about rugby sort of thing? Is there anything other aspects of rugby league you want to talk about?
Get it off your chest, Gareth. Come on.
Not really, no.
We're like Tony Smith recently, you know, because he went out the game for a while, and he was almost getting, like, you know, annoyed about the amount of games that we play in the season, you know, and he left the game for a while. Obviously, he's back in the last week or so. So, just like anything that, you know, from rugby league as a general, what you think about the game, I suppose.
Oh, I suppose each and every year, the hardest thing, I suppose, I'd say as a player, gets a little bit frustrating is you know, the interpretation of the games and the reffing changes and the speed of the play of the ball, etc., the wrestling. You know, we look at last year and all of a sudden it was, what was average, every game was 30 penalties.
Yeah.
And then this year we come in and the average has been 10.
Yeah.
Buzz as a player, in terms of the game, just, you know, a year goes by and you think, oh, how can we sort of change it?
Yeah.
All of a sudden we change and...
Do you think that it's who do you think's got it right? The NRL, they go up to the big screen and they take about 3 seconds to make the decision. Super League tends to run with 35 minutes. Which do you think's the which you think has got it right?
I'd have to be the NRL, wouldn't it? But yeah, it is. It's a hard one. I understand the pressures these refs and everyone get, and the games sort of put under there, trying to create the greatest spectacle, and they're coming up with different ideas and new ways to think. You know, to promote the game, I guess, and be more entertaining. But sometimes, like I said, as a player, you come in a pre-season and they go, oh, this year we're changing this year's that, and then all of a sudden it's back to square one again halfway through the year. So,
and when we've noticed that with the consistency at Warrington, you know, we had Ben Curry running through the line early in the season at Wakefield, and you know, they go up to the big screen and they find some reason to chalk it off. And then only last week at Hull KR, we pretty much do exactly the same play. I think it was, you know, was it Jack Hughes that ran through, Sam? I can't remember. He ran through as the dummy runner, didn't he? And
Jack
and
Hughes just contacted on the dummy runner,
And it's just given. If anything, it was worse than the first one.
Yeah, it's all, and that's probably another thing. The obstruction rule is always going to be a hard one. That's always such a grey area of our game, and I'm not sure exactly.
I suppose because you as players are trying to push it to be right on the limit, aren't you, to distract the opposition as much as you can without giving that penalty, I suppose.
Yeah, you are. No, nobody intentionally runs into someone and knocks them over, and that's the fine line. As players, it's very hard just to disappear in our sport and get out of the way and not contact. Yeah.
I remember when I played, I did a lot.
Oh, here we go.
I'm 6'4" and I was about 16 stone at about 18, and
you're
I played
a fat bastard.
I hide it quite well, and they just used to put me at prop because I'd just run with no sense of anything. But I gave up because they hurt me back. But one thing that does strike me is that how do you go on with dealing with criticism and stuff? Because you know, I constantly tell people at work that they're doing a shit job. And, you know, but I have to do it in a particular way. And with the podcast as well, is that, you know, we it's so easy for us to be critical, and we like to keep it quite light because, you know, there's nothing worse than listening to a podcast that is like, you know, blokes droning on and being negative. How do you deal with like the criticism and things like that?
Look, I suppose it's like any job you do, or the more experience you get, you know, the better you become with it. You know, I've certainly gone through sort of difficult times. I think for me, the hardest was, I think, 2016 when I became captain. We didn't really perform well as a team that year. I wasn't performing as the way I wanted to. And, you know, it was a good learning curve. I sort of just got that captaincy because Ben Craig basically had to retire. And I sort of just worried about everyone else's game before myself. And I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And I probably copped to sort of a lot of criticism that year. And I suppose you just got to know that you're doing everything possible to perform well. You know, sometimes you can do everything right, and for whatever reason, things are just not happening for you. But you know, I'm quite lucky. I've also got my wife and kids at home to sort of keep me distracted, I guess. And
yeah,
basically, don't watch TV, don't watch the news, don't read the papers, and I suppose that's all you can sort of do. Go away and work on your game, and it's very. Yeah, it's you can't just say it doesn't affect you because it will at some point. It's just how much, and like, as you get a bit older, you just get used to dealing with it and responding.
I think that's something that we don't appreciate in the normal lives of, like, you know, having open criticism against you. And like, you know, when you do get criticised, you feel it quite a bit. So I think it's quite a testament to you guys that you actually put up with that, and you do a pretty good job to just keep turning up every week and taking it on board. So
I suppose from us fans, you're either heroes or you're villains, aren't you? There's not much in between each week. You either won and we think you're brilliant, or you've lost and we're like, bloody hell, lost again, type of thing. There's no in between, really.
Nah, that's certainly the case. And you've certainly got your loyal supporters out there who'll back you to the end. And but sometimes when you lose and you feel like you've got people who sort of can turn on you, and it is a little bit like that. I suppose a fan, you're either a hero or you're a villain, and sometimes I suppose you can sort of feel like that as a player. But yeah, as a player and individually, all you can, I suppose, worry about is your preparation on, you know, how you're training, what you're doing. And to be fair, the only people's opinion who really matter is your coaches and your teammates. Opinion outside of that really is irrelevant. And if that's, you know, affecting, if they're affecting you, then it's not going to help you perform any better or, you know, improve.
So I'll ask one of Rob's emergency questions. His emergency question is, would you rather have a hand made of ham or a nipple that dispenses sun cream? Bearing in mind that the sun cream doesn't actually stop, it would continue to dispense. And if you ate the hand of ham, it would actually grow back within 48 hours.
And it's nice ham as well.
Oh, I would go with the ham then.
Oh, it's interesting that. Because Tom Lynham went the nipples. He said that he couldn't play with a ham hand, which is interesting. Have you ever seen a ghost, Gareth?
No.
Do you believe in ghosts?
No.
Crown green bowling or flat green bowling?
Flat green bowling.
You're going flat green? Ooh.
It's all flat down here as well.
A bit of a call from a lad from Halifax. PS4 or Xbox?
PS4.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Favourite game on the PS4?
It has to be Fortnite, wouldn't it?
Oh, you can tell it's a different generation to us.
Yeah.
No Sonic the Hedgehog there. Well,
that's me son's playing, I think, right now, so he's about to get the arse off because he shouldn't be in bed, so...
your biggest break at snooker?
Oh, Jesus, I haven't played snooker. They don't play snooker out here, do they?
No, but you'll be playing when you get back to Yorkshire.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I'm just going to guess 34. That works.
I think Sam might have you there. What's your biggest break, Sam? You would have gone past that, wouldn't you?
No. About 20 odd. I regularly got in the 20s and never any further.
Oh, dear. So you just not got that composure, Sam. You start.
I go to pieces. Once the pressure comes on, I go to pieces.
keep your piece. Football. Most you've done. You must be able to go forever, can't you?
Yeah.
Dennis used to be able to go forever.
I don't count. 50.
Yeah, doesn't even count. When you don't even count, you know you're doing a high amount.
Yeah.
I did 12 at netball last week. I got to 11, and the 12th one went like into the middle of the court, and I went after it and booted it about four courts down just to get that 12.
I love my football. Me and James Graham are all constantly being in trouble at training for getting the soccer out and whipping in crosses at training.
Is he a Liverpool fan or Everton fan?
Everton. Big Everton.
Is he Everton?
Huge.
I'm sorry. Well, you could pass on our condolences to him. That'd be good. Well, I think we're done, mate. Have you got any other questions for him before we let Gareth go?
I think we should let Gareth have a question.
Appreciate the hour. Thank you, mate. I really appreciate the hour, basically.
Nah, that's too easy, boys. It's been a fun hour.
Have you got any questions, Gareth? Come on. What would you ask some up-and-coming podcasters? Because Rob wants to put us in for the Sony Awards next year.
Don't change that shirt.
Okay.
Gareth, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. All the best at St George this year. We hope you end up with that grand final winner's medal. And then you come over to the Wire next year and you set the crowd alight, mate. All the best.
No worries. Yeah. Thanks, fam.
All the best.
All right. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, Gareth. Thanks, mate. We could live.